Welcome to Follow Your Kind podcast, a show where we explore the meaning of kindness and how we can express it in our daily lives. My name is Christina and I'm your host.
All right. Hello, everyone. Thank you again for joining, and you are listening to Follow Your Kind podcast. And my name is Christina Rastergujeva. Today, we are continuing with our season two. Follow Your Kind, and in season two I interview my beautiful friends and heroes from the PPOD family, and that is a plant-based prevention of disease conference. I attended two of them in a row, 2017 and 2018, and met many amazing beautiful people. It's just a great community. And today we have Kathy Pollard on the podcast today. Hi Kathy, how are you?
Hi, Christina, and hello, everybody. It's so great to be here.
Well, good. So thank you so much for joining. Thank you for taking the time. And Kathy Pollard is the adjunct faculty in the University of New England Graduate Program in Applied Nutrition. She's a co-founder of SustainableDiet.com that we will talk about in just a little bit. She's also a member of the Board of Directors in Plant-Based Prevention of Disease, the PPOD conference I mentioned, an active participant, and I've met her two times through that conference now. And she's also a former instructor at T. Colin Campbell Center for Nutrition Studies Certificate Program. And I actually have had you as my instructor when I passed that certification, Kathy. So it's just amazing how things come full circle.
Yeah, that is lovely. And I'm so pleased that you've kept in touch. And I've got to tell you, that is one of the most reinforcing parts of my work, is that people still, in every conference that I end up or wherever I see people in the plant-based world, I hear of former students and how much they got out of the Center for Nutrition Studies course. And that has just been one of the highlights of my life, is teaching for the T. Colin Campbell Center.
Well, thank you.
And also, Christina, thanks for mentioning the PPOD conference, which is it fits so nicely in this concept for your podcast in general, because it's all about inclusiveness and allowing anyone from all parts of society and all walks of life to understand the healing powers of a plant-based nutrition, which is there for everybody. And the information should be there for everybody so that everybody can empower themselves to take control of their health. And that's really the foundation of that conference itself. So I didn't think of that until just now. So I appreciate that you sort of brought that into this circle.
Oh, absolutely. And it's one of my favorite communities, and just the people there, as you said, are so accepting and at the same time so educated, and there's so much great information and that people are just willingly sharing in hopes of spreading the message and spreading the kindness.
Yes, that's true.
Great. Well, thank you again for being on the podcast today. And I usually like to start by just giving our guests an opportunity to briefly describe their journey and if there was a moment of decision or a moment of a change and transformation that took place in your lifestyle or your thinking that led you to do the work that you do today.
Well, thanks. I love that beginning, that way to start a conversation. And well, I've been doing this for 30 years or so, eating a plant-based diet. And I when I think back on it, because I'm asked that a lot, what started you on this path towards eating an optimal diet or a plant-based diet, which is an optimal diet, by the way, eating whole plant foods, which includes, I'm sure other guests have defined that, but whole plant foods, whole fruits, vegetables, whole grains and legumes. That's what I define as a sustainable diet as well as a plant-based diet. Mm-hmm. And now the term vegan is also interchangeable, I guess, another topic, but I'm asked that a lot because I've been doing this for 30 years. And when I look back on it, I think of it as a gradual journey But really, when you asked me that question, how did you start off? I guess I really did start off at one particular, a couple of experiences that I think just hit me like a double punch in the stomach, and all the way back then, about 30 years ago, which is when my husband and I were getting married and thinking of having children. And I really vowed to myself that I would nourish myself and my children to the best of my ability and just grow these beings into the healthiest beings I could in my power. That was one part of it way back then. And the other part of it was reading a book that was all about kindness, really, by John Robbins back in the mid-80s. I think he wrote this in 1987 or was published, which is called Diet for a New America.
Yes.
And back then it was revolutionary, and it really opened a curtain on the animal agriculture industry and the lives and the experiences of the animals themselves in confined animal agricultural facilities, particularly dairy cows. And it just hit both of us, my husband and I, so strongly. We just looked at each other and said, that's it. We know that we are on this path now, and we felt we needed to be vegan, but it took us a little while to get there. But we were certainly vegetarian from that day on and became vegan and raised our children vegan. So I would say it was those two things, John Robbins' book and being ready to, you know, be responsible for the nourishment of other human beings.
Right. This is so beautiful. And I think what I'm taking from what you just said is that you were able to find your why, and you had a very strong why, the commitment and the intention to do the best, the absolute best you can to raise your children and give to your family the best nutrition and care that you could. And then to double up on that, after reading the John Robbins book, you were able to empower more your why, but also I imagine get some of the how in there. And I think those two are very important components today, and I'm sure you'll be talking about that later in behavioral change. But it seems like it's people, so I hear a lot of people say that, you know, it's hard to be on plant-based diet, or it's hard to be vegan. It's just so hard to implement in your daily life. But I think when you have a clear why, then you figure the rest out. It becomes really easy. If you see really clearly why it is that you want to make the change that you want to make, everything else just falls into place, and you find the way, as you said, you just figure it out.
Yeah. Wow, you just touched on so many points right there. And one is that we are dealing with behavior change. When people say, it's hard, you know, how do you do that? It's hard to be vegan, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Well, it's not the diet, it's behavior change. Mm-hmm. Behavior change is hard. Humans don't want to change their habits. And we're sort of hardwired to find the easiest way towards nourishment and sustainability. So it's not any particular diet that's hard to transition to. It's changing behavior, and that's all it is. And you also touched on the why and the how, and just that leads into this concept that behavior change takes a lot of elements in place for any particular person to make that change. You know, as you say, you need to be inspired by something. There needs to be a spark of interest that comes from within as to why you want to make some sort of change. And that leads to motivation, and that leads to action, personal action. And that inspiration might not be comfortable for some people. It might involve regret, or maybe you're not happy with what you're eating or your weight or, you know, the actions that you realize you're involved with. And so that might not be happy, and you might want to run away from that feeling. But sometimes it takes many experiences before someone is at the point of motivation towards action. And all that has to do with behavior change. So you just brought up, you know, many, many points.
That is so interesting. And I'd love to talk more about the behavior change in just a minute, but I want to let you have an opportunity to finish your story and maybe speak about what was your transition like, what were maybe some of the hardest points or things for you to give up, or some of the hardest behaviors to change, and then also how did your family react to it? Because another thing I hear a lot is, well, I would go vegan, or I would go plant-based, but I just can't because I have children and husband and I have to cook for them and all of that stuff. So would you speak mm-hmm. about your experience a little bit more?
Mm-hmm. Sure. Well, it's true that it's easier to change your habits if you're in a household that is doing the same. And I was lucky enough to go on this journey with my partner and my husband. So that made it a little easier. We decided to raise our children in mainstream America, and they went to public schools and they were part of, you know, music programs and sports programs. And that means snacks. And we live in, you know, the middle of rural Pennsylvania. So it's not like we had a community of vegans around us. We really put ourselves on this path. Without many, many people around us. But in our household, this is what we did. We ate whole fruits. I wasn't that strict in terms of refined foods. I mean, we had some packaged foods in our life, and we had cereals, and we had treats, and I baked, but I didn't bake with eggs, and I was able to make tasty treats without any animal products in them. So the children could bring these things, you know, to school, and they had treats. And as they got older and became more and more involved in activities, I chose not to be strict. And if they wanted to taste, you know, what other people are eating, they did. And every time they did, that was another time they realized that they weren't deprived and they liked their food better at home. So it really wasn't a disadvantage for them to have the pizza at the parties after, you know, an activity. They had one bite of cheese pizza, and that was then my daughter would break out and acne the next day. And that was the end of that. And that happened a few times, and she got tummy aches, and then she put it together. So I think allowing, as the children get older, allowing a little discovery on their own goes a long way. Because I can tell you, I've got two amazing adult citizens who are completely vegan and compassionate and have no interest in eating any other way but health supporting, and they're just great models in the world. So it has paid off in that way.
That is so cool. And I mean, first of all, just props up to you for being so compassionate, but at the same time, so understanding with your children and doing the best that you can, but at the same time, giving them the freedom to explore on their own. I'm sure it must be hard as a parent at times. But I also want to say that it sounds like from quite a few people that I have spoken to in the plant-based and vegan community who had to make a decision of how to address that area of life with their children, mm-hmm. it seems a repeating topic that just doing your best with providing the best nutrition at home, and most importantly, setting the example is important, but at the same time, allowing that freedom to explore and then allowing the children to make their own decisions and to find their own why is also very important as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's interesting that you've heard that before from other experts that you've had, because I think there is a broad opinion on this. And also, I would like to add to that it was a journey for us too, and we were not strict vegans throughout the upbringing of our children. And at times we had eggs, and at times we gave up and we had the cheese at times. But we learned from that too. And then as a researcher, I mean, the more and more information that came out, and I learned about the effects of these foods on health, I gave them up. And of course, what was demanded and needed to make these foods, animal products, which is just unsustainable and cruel, it was easy, much easier to give that up. But I guess I just want to emphasize that our journey, any journey is not dependent on perfection and becoming vegan to the highest standard from day one. It's a journey for all of us. And, you know, you don't fail if you eat something you, in retrospect, you would rather have not. You just get back on and eat better the next day or make better choices in any aspect of life. So that's sort of one of my, you know, important food rules to take on. I have sustainable planet food rules, and one of them is don't sweat the small stuff, which is, you know, don't worry if you're not perfect in your diet. Just eat better the next time, or, you know, just reflect on what makes you uncomfortable or what you're not happy about, and then you do better the next time.
Right. Well, this is actually sounds like a perfect transition, because I would love to talk or rather let you talk more about the work that you do today. And kind of the question that may be leading up to that is, in my personal experience, the reason I discovered vegan and plant-based lifestyle was for health reasons. But the reason I stayed 100% being vegan is for the reasons other than health. So it's, of course, mm-hmm. the sustainability, it's the environment, it's the animal cruelty. And I mean, there's so many other reasons, but I know you mentioned in our conversation just briefly before that your motivation today and one of the things that inspire you and motivate you a lot today is the sustainability aspect of this. So would you talk a little bit more about your current motivation for staying fully vegan and plant-based, and talk about the sustainable diet that you mentioned?
Sure. I would have to echo what you said. I think I'm the same in that I did, you know, at least in my foremost mind, I thought I was coming to this way of life for health and for the health of my family. But really, in the end, what I found was that the health of all beings were affected by my habits. And then I learned to include in that circle of compassion not just the animals but that are affected by my choices, but the people on the other side of the world who are affected by my choices, and the people who don't have as much food security in their lives and know where their next meals are coming from, or, you know, those who may be going hungry. All that has to do with my personal choices with food. Well, I've done a lot of research recently on sustainability and what a sustainable diet is. So I could define what that is a bit and go into a bit of my background and my work. I am writing a book on that right now, which has to do with the most sustainable diet and the effect of our dietary habits on greenhouse gas emissions and the environment and global warming. And that has to do with the amount of energy put into the processing of food and how much nutritional value we get out of that process. And animal food agriculture takes the most resources and the most energy and the most fuel and produces the least amount of calories for that big input compared to any vegetable food, any plant food. Mm-hmm. So that in itself affects sustainability. So a sustainable diet is one that provides optimal nourishment for personally for individuals at all stages of life. It sustains life and maintains health as optimally as possible using the most efficiently used resources available. And it sustains eating habits that supports a diet that nourishes your own body. But globally, it allows for food security and reduces hunger for the most number of people in the most number of communities and populations, and it aims to provide nutritional security and efficient water use, and preserves our precious resources like soil and water and and the oceans as best as we can, and aims to maintain global ecosystems beyond our own communities. And it can be a variety of dietary patterns, but by definition, a sustainable diet would be a plant-based diet, a diet that depends mainly on whole plant foods, because that minimizes the amount of fossil fuels used and the amount of fertilizer use that has a lot of pollutants and nitrogen runoff that affects our water supplies all over the world. And it's the most inefficient way of producing food, because if you think about it, if you just think of a cow, you give a cow a whole lot of grass or grain or soy, and they process it through their body, and then we eat what they produce from that on the outside from their tissues and their milk, and we get very little nutritional value for that big input. In other words, it takes about 10 times of grain to make, you know, one of the same caloric value of, you know, food on the output. And so it's just very wasteful, just as an example.
Mm-hmm. And if I may ask a quick question as we go. So I hear that you make a great argument and very clear point about the animal agriculture being just extremely inefficient in energy in versus energy out. So that ratio of the output and the value and the nourishment that it provides to us. But if any of the listeners are in doubt, or if they're not sure about the current state of the environment, or maybe the critical point that we're in, are you able to share maybe some numbers or some comparisons or some possible prognoses about why should we care today to produce the most our food in the most efficient manner? I know you mentioned the pollution, the food scarcity issues, the water problems, but is there can you paint a picture of why should we care and why should we produce food in an efficient way today?
Oh, I see. Well, there are two main reasons. One is that our population continues to increase, and you know, really about half of the population of the world doesn't eat enough, doesn't have a secure, process of nourishing themselves from day to day, or worry about food. And the other half eats too much. In other words, we are able to produce so many calorically dense food so cheaply through our process of animal agriculture that we eat too many calories, because it's cheap and too easy to take in. And in these foods, there's no fiber involved that regulates. There's no fiber in there's no fiber in animal foods. So fiber is what regulates the macronutrients going into the bloodstream and then the cells. So we can eat a whole lot of calories without it being mitigated by fiber. So many of us eat too many calories in the Western world, and we overeat, we're overweight, and that precludes us towards disease. So that in itself is this precarious dichotomy that we can address. I mean, if we didn't eat that way and we transition to more of a plant-based agricultural system globally, then that would allow for more people to eat properly and have food and have more of a secure system to nourish themselves, and we wouldn't be responsible for so much hunger in the world. And so that is one element that a sustainable diet addresses. Mm-hmm. And Also, in terms of the inefficiency, yes, the numbers are, it takes about 10 times more land and water to produce, say, a kilogram or a measurement of food, a measurement of animal food compared to plant food. And that sort of varies a lot. I mean, it takes, I think, for beef, it takes about 36 times more soil and cropland than it does to produce the same amount of any substitute vegetable. And what we know is if we were to just in America substitute, say, beans for beef, we would be able to eliminate simply greenhouse gas emissions. So, like 75% of, we could get to the target that we have set for ourselves globally by, say, 2050 to reduce our greenhouse gas emissions and control our environmental impact. We set a certain standard a few years ago in these Paris and Kyoto climate agreement talks to get to a certain level by 2050 to reduce our greenhouse gas emissions. If we were just to replace beans for the beef that this country, Americans, eat, we would get to 75% of that target. In other words, we would reduce our greenhouse gas emissions by that amount, just by that one change, that one behavior change. And when you change your diet, you're not just reducing greenhouse gas emissions. You're when you adopt a whole food plant-based diet and eat those foods and demand that farmers grow food to feed to humans, you're protecting the soil, you're protecting the water, you're eliminating any responsibility that you have towards the harming of other animals. And all these different elements play besides reducing the amount of energy it takes to feed yourself and reducing the amount of greenhouse gas emissions. So it's just a win-win-win-win-win when you choose that. It's the most effective way to affect your own carbon footprint, because it doesn't just affect greenhouse gas emissions. It affects all these other elements that protect the environment, other people, and your health.
Right. This is just, it still baffles me sometimes because I just think it's such a no-brainer. If you were just to choose the whole food plant-based diet that is vegan, you not only improve your own health, but you also save animals and you absolutely decrease your personal footprint, carbon print on the environment. And you just, you're completely changing the amount of waste that your actions produce on a daily basis and the pollution that is producing in turn in on our planet today. And it just seems like it's such a no-brainer. Why is it so hard for some people to see it?
Well, that is why you're doing what you're doing. And that's the heart of the problem. And that is because people cannot act on what they do not know. And this is in essence hidden from main society. I mean, because who does it benefit if we eat well? It's cheaper for us to eat well. We get less sick. And we demand less pharmaceuticals. We're eating less processed foods, and therefore we're not buying the stuff that marketers want us to buy. Who's winning here? us away. And so this information isn't advertised, right? It's hidden, as Paul McCartney likes to say. If slaughterhouses had glass walls, then everyone would be vegan, right, or vegetarian. Yeah. It's a horrific practice that is condoned by society because it's hidden from its people, from us.
Well, I agree with you, and I'm sure you have more experience than I do in this, so please feel free to chime in if I'm not accurate in this. But it seems like the lack of information is only a component of this, because I have encountered people, or I've spoken to people before who have seen the documentaries or who have read a book, or who some of them have even tried the lifestyle for like a limited period of time, but then for some reason they slide back. And then I also have several friends right now who tell me, like, I know I should be doing this, but I just can't. And they're aware of a lot of the facts. Maybe they don't feel them on like a visceral level as you and I do, but maybe, but they're still at least aware of the facts. What do you think prevents them from taking the leap and making the change?
Yeah, I think you make a very, very good point. And that circles back to the point that I was making, that for many of us, it takes many elements in place in order to make this behavior change. And you touched on, I think you were leading towards a point that we didn't talk about yet, which is the environmental support, both the built society around us, our environment around us, as well as social support that is usually and often missing when it comes to making better dietary choices. It's hard to do that in our society because fast food is getting burgers and animal foods and, you know, foods that don't support health, and not, you know, farmers markets on every corner, but convenience markets on every corner that allow you to get this food. So it's our built environment that doesn't support us, and all the food that's easy and cheap to grab around us, as well as we're not doing what our friends and our family are doing. We're not participating in the barbecue, you know, in our family reunion, hot dogs, and you know, then isolated and we're excluded from our tribe. And that, you know, you can't sustain this change by yourself, because humans are not isolated beings. We're social animals. So I think it's because of those two points. And to address them, we must create and find our own tribe to support us in this change, even if it's people who we love and trust but aren't on the same path. We need to find the people who want to support us in, you know, making healthy change. And that is, for many people, the biggest challenge.
Right. And as you were talking, I just got goosebumps, because I just thought about the first conference that I've attended. And at the first conference, the first plant-based conference that I've been at, actually was not the Peapod. It was the Remedy Food Atlanta. It was in November 2016, maybe. And it was the first ever plant-based conference that I've ever went to. And it's very hard for me to put in the words what I have experienced, because I, at that point, I didn't have many friends. I didn't actually have any like friends who were my close friends who were vegan, not even a whole lot of vegetarians. So I was kind of brewing in my own stew, or however I should put it. Yeah. And gosh, so, I mean, at times I would keep myself motivated, but then at other times I would just think that I was going crazy, because I just didn't have any other people to relate to. And then all of a sudden I walk into this room and there are 300 people, and a lot of them have things like MD after their names. So they're educated people who are promoting this lifestyle, and they don't look at me like I'm crazy or weirdo or picky about my food. And I mean, I learned how to levitate for those 3 days. And that's why I think what kept me coming back and attending the Plant-Based Prevention of Disease conference in 2017 and the 2018 conference, it was the biggest conference that we had so far. And it was just so, so, so beautiful to see all these people who are like vibrating on the same frequency and who are so supportive. And like, you just don't realize when you see that when you're able to tap into that community, as you say, and build that environment and have that social support, you just feel like you can take on the world with this diet.
Oh, Christina, you said that so beautifully. That's so exciting. So I wanted to highlight a couple points that you said. So first of all, I have two reactions. One is one amazing experience that I share with you is walking into a room in a conference like that, like the Plant-Based Prevention of Disease PPOD conference in May, which is going to be in Raleigh again in May 2019, mm-hmm. Or so many others like local vegetarian conferences or festivals, if you walk into a room with dozens or hundreds of others who are there, there's a different aura, there's a different feeling. And I've experienced this, the first conferences that I've gone to, and I've been going to this conference for close to 20 years, the North American Vegetarian Society, it's now called Vegan Society, Summerfest in Johnstown, Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. I walked into the first plenary of hundreds of people, and it was walking into a room of kindness. Everybody there had a mindful reason to embrace this or just simply learn more about this lifestyle. They were there because of the kindness core in them, and they wanted to not only, you know, find the way, whatever their motivations for being there, of eating better for themselves, or to not participate in violence towards other animals, or that they know that this is the only way they can call themselves an environmentalist. It was from a source within of kindness. And you walk into this room and you feel embraced with kindness. So I think that word comes to mind. Now, having said that, there are other ways to build your community. If you cannot, you know, walk into a room of kindness at one of these types of summits or conferences, find these places and societies and groups and communities online or in meetups even, or there are other ways to connect, particularly on, you know, on the computer.
That is so cool. Yes, I definitely agree with you, and that having somebody to be on this journey with and to walk along with is definitely so helpful, and just bouncing the inspiration of each other, and it just makes it fun. And another thing that I always makes me laugh in this kind of events is there's such a bond, and there's something that just we automatically assume, at least I assume when I meet other people who are a vegan or plant-based, and it's like, oh, you're plant-based, I'm plant-based, I love you automatically. And that's how I feel too. I just feel automatically loved.
That's true. And so I propose taking that to the next step. And that's partly what I have motivated me to write a book about the connection between animal agriculture and global warming. But that is that spread, you know, make your own circle of kindness and spread the word and throw parties and offer beautiful, nourishing plant-based food and share what you know in fun and joy and celebration and joyfulness. I think that's the way to spread this movement, is to, you know, offer this to more and more people from a place of joy, and you know, scaring people about the, you know, their habit, about the ramifications of their habits is maybe effective, but it's paralyzing and it's not uplifting. But sharing the joyfulness of this, and not, you know, having to nourish ourselves with having any involvement in harm, is just so liberating. And I just think that's so empowering in itself, and that it's our job, just like you're doing here, to spread the word and to make it a party and celebrate the kindness and joy that we're bringing.
I love it. I'm taking it with me. Make it a party. I'm going to write it down. That's perfect.
In fact, that's the working title of the book is Climate Party. That's the name of the book.
That's so cool. I'm looking forward to it. Okay, well, I want to make sure that you have time to speak about the sustainablediet.com and the work that you do. So please share all you want on that aspect.
Okay, thank you. Yes, and then I'll offer your guests, you know, a free offer. Yes, well, I have a program online called sustainablediet.com, which is... a 3-month transitional support program for doing just this, helping people on their journey make their own goals towards a more sustainable whole food plant-based diet from wherever they are. And it's just a fun program filled with many experts, just like what you're doing, is of having experts come in videos, share their experience, and teach people how to adopt a healthier diet for health. It concentrates on health. And we have a program that involves mentoring and support groups and so many fun exercises and many experts talking about nutrition and tips and cooking. And we've also developed some just free information. There's a lot of information up at sustainablediet.com. So go there and sign up and look at the many articles for free. But we also have a 30-day free vegan startup kit for people. And I'll share that link with your guests that people can join and just have 30 days of exercises and interaction and recipes and tips and goal setting so that they can adopt a whole food plant-based diet. So that's what Sustainable Diet does and what it offers. And it's helped many people get off, lower their cholesterol numbers, lose weight, gain control of their insulin levels. And it's life-changing because it allows people to find a higher level of health. So I thank you for letting me share that with people. And I really hope that people go to the website so they can find resources to help them.
Absolutely. And first of all, thank you so much for the work that you do and for putting that together. And of course, certainly thank you for allowing the listeners and sharing that 30-day link. And I'll make sure to include it on the show notes as well. But something that I just wanted to mention as I was looking through the resources on the website on sustainablediet.com prior to that, and the lectures and some of the your faculty members and the contributors that you have to this program are just the titans of this movement. I mean, you have Dr. Michaela Carlson and yourself, of course, and the Brenda Davis, who wrote several books on becoming vegan with amazing resources. You have Chef AJ, who's just a vibrant personality of an amazing entertainer and chef on top of everything in plant-based and vegan community, and Dr. Stone, mm-hmm. Dr. Michelle McMackin, Dr. Robert Ostfeld, another amazing leader, and of course Dr. Sari Stanchik, and with her personal story, and
Juliana Heber.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Yeah.
Yes, thank you for mentioning them. They are all my heroes too. I mean, we have Brenda Davis, RD, who teaches basic nutrition in our it's I don't like to call it a course because it's too much fun. It's just a program, but she's a grandmother. She's just my age, so she's just about 60, and she is in the best shape. I mean, you can see her stand on her hand in class, on her hands in class, and she is just the picture of health. And I sort of feel people are always surprised because I'm a pretty perky 59-year-old, and I honestly feel better than I did when I was 20 years old and still eating meat. I have more energy than I used to, and I am loving aging, by the way, where most of my peers are now at the point where they're starting to, you know, have to take drugs to control their blood pressure or their cholesterol, or they're facing serious disease. I just feel like I'm getting better every day. And that's simply because I'm controlling the aging of my cells by what I eat, and fatigue feeling great, not feeling tired. So I offer this to everybody who are younger than me, you millennials. This is the way to slow your aging and feel great when you're older.
This is so great. Well, thank you. First of all, thank you for sharing the the hopeful and the positive message about aging, because I think a lot of people today are kind of scared about it and frightened about it. So just having somebody like you, full of energy and enjoying the process and learning and being so energized, is just it's just such a great kind of role model to have. And then also, I'm sure you get this a lot, but I would never say that you're 59. Never. I mean, you had so much energy at the PPOD conference and in Raleigh, North Carolina this year in May, and you were running around and organizing everything and running back and forth from the front to the back of the room. And it was a big room. It was like, what, 400 people in there. So this is amazing. You look great.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I feel great. And honestly, I've been told that a lot. So it makes me, it just makes me chuckle inside.
Great. Okay. Well, I want to be respectful of your time. So we still have just a few minutes left, but I wanted to see if there are any other tips or maybe main takeaways that you wanted to share, or maybe something that you didn't get a chance to discuss before I ask my final question.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll just take a quick minute to share some thoughts about that common question that people ask, like, how do you start? Okay, I want to eat better, but how do you start? Yes. And I think that's really crucial. And here are a couple of tips. The way that we like to start having people envision this lifestyle is by thinking of their big goal, like what is it that they want to achieve? And it might be, for many, it might be, oh, I want to eat better to lose weight, or I want to adopt a vegan diet to save the animals, or whatever a big goal is. Think of that, and then what you need to do is break it down into sort of bite-sized personal goals that you make yourself towards that. And a really, I think, an easy way, there are a few easy ways to start. One is, I think it's easier to add foods in compared to eliminate foods personally. But when you do that, you can hopefully crowd out the stuff that you want to eliminate in the end anyway. So you might want to start by making a pot of brown rice, because what you want to do is have the food around that can be the basis of a meal. And if you have rice around cooked or frozen, because you can freeze brown rice, then you can just add some beans, you can add some salsa, and boom, some green vegetable, and you've got a meal. Boom. So it might be, make a bunch of potatoes, bake a bunch of sweet potatoes, or make a pot of rice. Then you have it around for the rest of the week, and you can, you know, create meals. In the morning, you can make porridge with plant milk and maybe a little bit of fruit and maple syrup with rice. And then boom, you can do that on top of a baked potato, on top of a sweet potato, and you've got breakfast. And then you can, use Indian spices and make meals. So I would say make a foundation of starchy vegetables or grains. It could be millet, it could be, brown rice, it could be quinoa, potatoes, and then add to it for a meal. That's one thought. And another thought is, if you're suffering with any typical chronic conditions like, inflammation or excess weight or acne or sinus infections or autoimmune issues, you might want to, first thing, try eliminating all dairy from your diet, because that's a very allergenic food that many of us have a reaction to. We just don't digest it well. And just taking that out of your diet that might be your trigger. And that might just resolve many issues and motivate you to go deeper. So those are a few tips to start with.
That is so great. I like the adding component rather than eliminating something, because I think the one of the biggest fears that I usually hear from the people is, well, what I'm going to eat? I'm not going to have anything left to eat if I eliminate the meat and the fish and the dairy. There's nothing for me left to eat. But it's so great, because instead of eliminating things, you're just adding more plants, and then eventually, hopefully, you'll be able to kind of overcrowd the bad foods in your diet with more plants. And also, I'm sure from the behavioral perspective, from the your mind, it kind of tricks your mind into thinking abundance versus scarcity. So then you're not freaking out and you're not thinking that you're limiting yourself in so with something.
Great point. And if you still don't know where to start, just sign up for our 30-day free vegan thing and you'll get tips every day. You'll just get the idea is to spark goals that you can attain in your own life. And that's where you see the magic happens, is when you make your own goals that are attainable in your life. And then it becomes real and not this amorphous, you know, goal in the sky.
Right. And this is also kind of comes around to what we briefly mentioned before we started the recording, is you said meeting people where they are, and that being part of the kindness for you as well.
Right. That's really true. Wherever you are is the right place to start. There's no, you know, there's no wrong place to start, or, you know, you've gone too far in the other direction. You can, at any age or life stage, you can improve your health with diet.
That is a great, great message. Okay, well, again, I want to be respectful of your time, but I feel like I can be talking to you forever, so we might have to do it again.
Sounds good to me, Tina.
Okay, but I want to ask my final question. So I usually close out with asking, what does kindness mean to my guests? So what does kindness mean to you? And how do you get to follow it in your daily life? And I know it's obvious to me that you, of course, are a kind person. You follow that value. But I'm just curious to know, what does it look like from the inside for you?
Oh, well, that is such a lovely question and way to close all of your sessions. I love that. Well, I would say that kindness to me means finding the kindness in others first and accepting everyone at their place in their personal journey, wherever they are, and to include all living beings in my personal circle of compassion. So I would say that finding kindness means expanding your circle of compassion broader and broader, and to test your boundaries to see, you know, how much more living beings and people can fit into your own personal circle of compassion. And I get to help people every day to find their optimal health by finding their own goals towards attaining that. And I feel that that's a way that I get to practice kindness every day, because I get to empower people to find their own liberty and their own optimal way of living for their own personal reasons. Mm-hmm. So I guess that's what kindness means to me, and it's very overpowering. I'm sort of getting emotional just thinking about it.
Oh, well, that is absolutely beautiful, and it definitely, I mean, it's most definitely comes through just in the way that you carry yourself, and of course in the way that you work, in the work that you do, and in the way that you think through things, and in the way that you express yourself, and just in the way that how attentive you are about the questions in our conversation today. So I just thank you for your time today, for everything that you do, and thank you so much for taking the time, and I really hope that we'll do it again. I'll make sure to include all of the links that we discussed in the show notes, and I'm sure that the listeners will get a lot of value from this conversation, and hopefully by signing up on the 30-day trial.
Oh, thank you, Christina. Thank you for having me here and for creating this community yourself, this community of kindness. It's very, very well appreciated.
Thank you, Kathy.
For more information, you can go to followyourkind.com or follow me on Instagram at @kindchristina. Please also subscribe to the show and give me a good review. Thanks for stopping by.